You ready?
Let's do it.
Welcome to Conversations Around Conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app earlier today.
This is Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations, and it's a podcast to continue that conversation. Because every week on Clubhouse, Tuesdays at 12:55 Eastern, if you want to stop by, we have these incredible discussions with really, really smart people that sit at the intersection of technology and theater.
We always walk away from these Clubhouse talks with so many more thoughts because we only spend an hour in that room. So we decided to make a podcast, reach even more of our friends and collaborators, and basically just give ourselves another half hour to talk about all the interesting things. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. My background is in the theater. I love creating it, watching it, and of course, talking about it.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. And I try to bring a tech perspective because my background is actually in the startup world.
And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesdays. A very exciting Tech Theater Tuesday because for the very first time in the podcast history, we're in the same space together, recording into a real mixer with real mics. And it only took us 45 minutes to try to figure out how everything worked.
Was it only 45? It felt like a lifetime.
I might be being gracious about that.
And as our amazing comms director, Emily McGill, likes to say, Mercury is in motherfucking retrograde.
So true. But we got it working, knock on wood, because now I've probably ruined it all. Plus, Mike, Joe has a like professional setup now. I'm like, smoking my cigarette and have my martini, like this is old hat. But you've got a shock mount and a boom arm and
so fancy. It's got red accents, so I feel pretty.
Good. Good. It's all going per plan. All right. So let's get into it. This week on Clubhouse, we talked about a Broadway diversity database that's been compiled and is being updated by a company called Counting Together. This led us to a really great conversation about how we utilize that kind of data to hold people accountable and to make actual systemic change. Or maybe our conversation was also about like, maybe that just can't happen. Who knows? It was a good one today. It always is. But it was particularly interesting. And this organization, I think, is like exciting, if for nothing else, which is not true for lots of reasons, that it inspired such a big conversation around what comes next after the organization does its work.
Yeah, I feel like that's so much of where the power of this organization comes in, because it doesn't seem like, at least from everything I read and all we talked about, that they're actually doing research themselves yet. They're not actually yet collecting data, aggregating data, compiling data. They're sort of bringing it together from all the disparate sources that exist out there in the world, all the various studies that have to date been published, all the amazing research, and sort of like raising them up and bringing them together to have that larger conversation. And I guess the theory being that if you collect them all together, you can sort of spark more conversation than each of them individually. And so just bringing awareness to all of it and having this as a forcing mechanism to get it in front of people to be like, hi, you have to be thinking about this. You have to be talking about this. Look at these 20 studies, 30 studies, all of these stats from all of these different places that are enforcing the same idea that, hey, we actually haven't made as much progress as everyone wants to believe that we had, as everyone wants to just be able to say, yep, no, we fixed the problem already. I tweeted some things and I feel good. So therefore it's probably fine. But the data is not bearing that out. And they're doing a good job of bringing that fact to life through the lens of all these studies and sources of data that they're pulling together.
In a weird way, stick with me here, but it reminds me a little bit of like startup model land, VC, like unicorn startup model land, where like the prevailing, not only thought, but like research is make a thing and get all the people onto it and then figure out the model, because it's rare that you won't be able to convert enough, right? Like to like sustain something far down the track. But it's harder the other way around to like have figured out every way you're going to use the thing, right? And build the business model around it and then try to attract the massive use. So I'm not saying it's like the exact same thing, but I think there are actually some parallels in this.
Yeah, the if you build it, they will come model. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's exactly right.
No, I think that's the way they say it doesn't work, yeah. Right?
Yeah. If you build it, everyone will continue to ignore it in the sea of white noise that is the internet.
Yeah. So I like the idea, like, of, okay, we're going to aggregate all this data that a bunch of individuals and organizations are already collecting, consolidate to one output source, and then we'll figure it, like, have all eyes on it, and then we'll figure out what to do next with it, you know, or the company or whatever.
Yeah. I wish, like, we could talk to, I can't remember his name. I pulled it out, but my notes don't have it. The guy who founded this site, this organization, and be like, so where do you want to go with this? Like, what are your hopes, yeah, dreams, ambitions? Like, this is just a starting point. Like, what are you going to do?
Don't you think? I mean, I'm pretty sure probably this should turn into an hour long format where we do half hour with you and I, and then half hour with the people we talk about. Because so far, especially in the last couple of weeks, we've basically just supposed people's business models and like what we think they should do with their business.
I love to if that would turn into like Jess and Joe riff for a little bit, and then like everything they said gets corrected, redacted, yeah, changed, obfuscated in the second half hour, and it becomes a like, wow, so they really didn't know what they were talking about.
As, oh my god,
through conversation with other person who does.
Maybe we just inverse the format. The interview comes first, and then we have our Clubhouse conversation. Like,
let's do it all directions. I love it.
It's actually a pretty good idea. Hey, Luce, you want to make some notes? I remember when I was like, we can't schedule guests. It's such a pain in the ass. Let's just keep it us.
Going back on that already?
I'm annoyed with myself. It's fine.
I appreciate you do that because, like, I don't have to be annoyed if you're annoyed with yourself.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I also have no idea what it takes to, like, produce a podcast, schedule the guest. I just show up and look pretty.
About
my red-accented shock.
About 15 hours, if you'd like to know.
Yikes.
So much. What else were you thinking today in our conversation? We went a lot of different, our spokes on our wheel pointed in all directions.
Yeah. Well, I want to lob a thing out there that like will make sense on its own, but I think it'll connect across everything I say for the next half hour, which is we just need to give people who don't have as much money more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I guess my brain works very linearly. Jess knows this well, dear podcast audience. I think in spreadsheets and I can't not think in spreadsheets. And so I get stuck sometimes. And this was one of those times where every thought I had, I just like kept trying to map it backward and be like, oh, well, you know, there's probably opportunity in, you know, diverse voices, diverse stories because people want to see them. And it's like, oh, but if those people don't have the money to go to a Broadway show and see themselves represented, then like that falls apart there. And then I was like, okay, this other direction, let's go this other direction. And it just kept falling apart of the fact that the Broadway world, the theater world is catering to, or at least like the purse strings are held by a bunch of old, right, rich people. And how the heck does it become economically incentivized to tell different, more interesting, more creative, more crazy, more whatever, diverse stories? And if people don't have the money to put behind those things, and it all falls apart at the end of the day. So just like, I kept coming back down to the point of like, oh, the power comes from people who have a voice, you know, whether it be like the data that's here aggregated on this site and the stories that come from it, really hard won sort of like voice to be gotten. But like in our capitalist society, like money is your voice. You choose to, you know, you vote with your dollars, if you will. You choose to go see shows or not go see shows, or put your money towards certain movies or media or this or that. But if there's no money at the beginning of it, then it never turns into your voice elsewhere. And so you're left fighting through all of these other media. And I was like, oh, let's just like give everyone money.
In a stunning turn of events, because dear podcast listeners, my brain, on the other hand, usually works like a supernova that just like sends, or maybe like one of those weapon things that sends a bunch of spiky balls out in all directions. Do you know what I mean? What are those things called?
Don't, but I really like it. I'm like trying to imagine it right now.
Yeah.
Spiky balls into the ether.
I was in the same spot with this conversation, but on a different side of the problem. I mean, it literally broke me like a robot at the end of the conversation which is that if the theater owners, now lovingly dubbed the five families by yours truly, the five families don't, if the data's never unlocked, it's done. The whole thing breaks. Like the whole thing breaks because, and for y'all who were not with us today in Clubhouse, like the Broadway and commercial theater, which is quite different than other forms of theater, but in the Broadway families, you don't get the families own the data and not the producers of each individual show that move into a Broadway theater. It's so fucked. So what happens that I was saying on Clubhouse as I was realizing it in the moment is that like the data never gets passed down. So there's never a perception like we're never perceiving that there's a problem because there's no data to correlate, which means the producers are never incentivized to change and they can't do shit about it, even if they wanted to, because the five families control all the data. So it's funny. I actually think it like, we don't come to this very often. I feel like in our conversations in our companies or on Clubhouse, but this breaks in two different directions, like full stop, fucking can't be solved unless something new is built.
Give everyone money.
You get the lottery and you get the lottery and you get the lottery.
Yeah, more stimulus checks to everyone and progressive taxation. That'll solve the theater / everything downstream and upstream from it.
It reminds me of something that you pointed out once, well, that I said that you like, just emphasize that was revealing. And I can't remember what the context was, but like back to your side of the coin that you were thinking about today, like if there is no money to do the thing, right? No matter how needed or brilliant it is, the risk and the cost, not money cost, but just like peril cost to the person who's willing to just keep pursuing it is so immense and almost like uncountable. Like you can't even document it, which is why the American story dream, like fuck that noise, like is really like one out of every bazillion people, because you have to be an insane person to try to hoe that road and get your play on Broadway, you know, without any of the money.
Yeah. And then you have like the, what's that term? Survivor's bias, where like you hear the stories of the people who succeeded, but you do not hear the stories of the thousands of other people who did not succeed.
Oh yeah.
And so like we have this perception of like, oh, all you have to do is like put your head down, work hard. All you have to do is be Mike Bloomberg or whatever. Mm-hmm. And all the stories that we have are the successful ones because those are the stories people want to tell, want to hear. And you only get to the point of someone telling your story if you do succeed. It's mm-hmm. And like all the other people who stopped halfway or stopped 3/4 of the way or stopped 80, 90, whatever 1% of the way, like we don't hear those stories because they're not as interesting. They don't have that clean resolution. It's just like this person failed and now their life is not, it's different. And they're not even in this space that we think about or focus on or cover.
Which to be like even worse in artist land, the failure stories we hear about are the people who went like insane. Like mad, literally mad artists, you know, those are the people who get the books written about them.
Oh, that sounds great.
Like Antonin Artaud. And yes, that's two deep cuts today from the theater. I name checked Theater of the Oppressed during Clubhouse, to which there was not much discussion.
Whoosh,
and Antonin Artaud. So I feel like you would really dig Theater of the Oppressed. By the way, you should totally look it up and do a little research. Not this second. I also just realized, Lucy, now that we're not looking at a computer, you're going to have to like get on the mic to tell us when we got five and stuff. But it's okay because it's tracked.
Yeah, Lucy, we miss you.
Yeah. Do you want to jump in, by the way? Because I feel like you didn't talk a whole bunch today.
I know. I felt, I was like our audience today, just having a very good time listening. And I mean, in terms of holding people accountable, I guess what I kept thinking was like the finite amount of space that exists in theater for mm-hmm. like, there's only so many people that can occupy it. And so I think it was something like Jermaine saying, like at a certain point you can educate people, you can give them these numbers, but you need them to take that information, internalize it, and realize they need to take a step back. Mm-hmm. And there are just some people who are never gonna make that choice because it's on them to say, I'm gonna remove myself. And that opens a space where somebody else can occupy.
And the scarcity is just so bad.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, nobody wants to give up power.
What's that stat that came from one of the conversations we had with the Maestro team about like, there's one, I was going to say like lighting designer. I'm just throwing out a random role, but like there's one writing designer that is, just like one guy who does like 80% of them. I can't remember what the role itself is. And it just like the idea, like
very first episode, there are 80 alphabas for one lighting designer over time of a specific production.
Yeah. And so like that one person to step, they don't even step down. They just need to be like, who wants half of the work that I do? A tenth of the work
not
that
even,
I do?
And you
it just
know,
opens the space.
To Jermaine's point about hiring your friends, guess what actually happens? That lighting designer, when they hit 50 or 60, has an assistant. And that is usually someone that got suggested to them or that they know, right? Like, by the way, I'm saying that really, like, I have not done that research, so I could be completely wrong, and that could be so offensive to lighting designers. But we know how the world works, right? Like, they're not doing an open call for apprentices for the lighting designer, like a Broadway lighting designer. And that person just takes over their job when they retire or die. The end. That's how it works.
Isn't that, like, literally the definition of nepotism?
Yes.
Cool. I wanna take us back a step to the sort of the gatekeepers and the people who are structurally resistant to the sharing of this data. So if I'm thinking about it, sort of giving everyone money is the bottom-up approach. You know, if everyone has money and wants to see themselves represented, then people who care about having some of that money will start representing those people, putting on those shows, getting those people in their doors, whatever. Top-down approach is, you know, these five families. What was it? La Casta Nostra?
The Godfather, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I haven't seen The Godfather. Dear podcast listener, I am very bad at watching movies and television. My pop media education has been lacking.
Sorry.
Oops. So the top-down idea, they're obviously resistant to the data. Like, if nothing else, just because it's like, oh, we don't have to think about it. Let's not even waste our time worrying about it. Like, it's, I don't even know how much malice is in there. There's probably some, but like, I could see it being, you know, 80% just like laziness or like, we don't need to do that. We already are making money. We already are catering to the audience we care about. And I totally forgot where I was going to go.
Damn it.
Here we are.
No.
Maybe it was something along the lines of what data has the power to help overcome. So data through the lens of this article is like data to tell stories, data to shame people, mm-hmm. data to inspire people. And it feels like there's nothing that will shame or inspire these people who control all of it anyway. So even if like the data could be collected,
right.
and even if the story could be told that, you know, it's horrible and this and that, like, it's still not going to actually change anything from the top down.
Oh, no, 100%. Like, my brain was like, probably just because I watched the season finale of Legendary. No spoilers on what happened, but one of the mothers of one of the houses wore this beautiful custom dress that said, like, said in writing, "Free the nipple." But she didn't think that's where I was going.
I'm just like, I'm waiting. I'm doing nothing where I stare at you, waiting to figure out how this resolves.
Remember when I said my brain sends out all the spiky balls everywhere and then comes back in like supernova? It makes me think of like Free the Data. Like, can we ethically hack telecharge? I'm serious. Because there's no incentivization.
Leave it in. Don't take that out of this podcast.
I said ethically.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Can I, you know, ethically murder someone?
Well, it's Free the Data. I'm not killing anybody.
All right, Edward Snowden.
Whatever. That was an important moment in American
Julian
history.
Assange. I'm just trying to remember all these people.
He's
who are,
not that great.
Yeah. I mean, WikiLeaks like has served a purpose, even if he sucks.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I just need to start like a, don't tell anyone.
A hacktivist collective?
Yeah, Broadway like WikiLeaks. Because that, I mean, to all joking aside, I don't.
Are we relocating the podcast to Russia?
Yes. But that's where we are right now already in preparation.
I wish I could do a Russian accent. I'm not good at accents either. No. I think it's part of the connectivity to like my not watching enough TV.
Now you have a mic. You never know what happened. But seriously, like they're not incentive. There is actually no incentivization to release that data. My brain that refuses to accept there's not a solution to a problem. Like the next place to go is like, how do you free that data against their will? Also,
I guess you could collect it passively, right? So like during the Clubhouse conversation, I brought up the comparison to data about police departments around the country mm-hmm. and specifically
police
misconduct and police brutality and how many localities and states have like literally laws in the books that say like, no, you cannot collect this data. You cannot do research about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so these other organizations, I think there's like something inside of UCLA's inside the university, like collecting this data, and they're just doing it passively. Like they are just like calling people and trying to figure it out.
Them.
And it's like,
but this is
it's not official. It's as official as we can get, but it's like not literally a system inside of each police department across the country where they're inputting data that then goes to a central repository. It's like people just putting in the time and the effort, making phone calls, trying to figure things out. and collecting the data? And like, could that be possible, right? If people are just like tracking playbills and being like, okay, let's count the people and who's working on this and calling that person and just like guerrilla data collection.
I mean, that's where I love that. And I'm trying to get my brain around it because it's not only the data about people going to the Broadway show, the emails, right? Like we have no access to any information about ticket holders on Broadway. It is, except for the like satisfaction with the show survey that you get sometimes, which is so fucking stupid. So like, do we just call people out and then ask if they've been to a Broadway show? And I'm really asking this question.
Like, surveying.
Yeah. And then if they have been in the last 6 months, we start asking other questions. Like, I'm kind of into that. But I want to know, is that what the kind of thing you're thinking about? Because I'm not familiar with this.
I was thinking more. Well, one, to shout out UCLA's Center for Policing Equity.
Nice.
That's the organization that I lost. And then also the Bureau of Justice Statistics, who are doing this work of collecting this information for police departments around the country, or for the people from police departments.
Yeah.
It isn't what you just described with like surveying people wasn't what I was thinking. It's like, it would be just like, what is the laundry list of shows? What are all the metrics that we're trying to find from that? And like just calling people who are somehow tangential or related to or adjacent to the shows and being like, who is the lighting designer on this? Or who is this person? Or what is that person? So it's like actually the composition of the shows themselves.
Not the audience. Got it.
What you're talking about could absolutely like do that work. I don't know how you would set up that survey or what you would need to do to make sure it's like statistically significant, but yeah. Doable, especially with like internet-based polling now. I feel like it is a bit cheaper, and I don't know all the implications of how quality-wise you control for the fact that like anyone can click on anything on the internet and anyone can be anyone on the internet.
We'd have an idea. What if
Jess is raising her hand?
So what if? Oh, I love what we do so much. What if in every single one of our venues for fall 20 in digital venues, if you didn't know, we put on live digital shows or for digital live shows for digital audiences. What if every single one of our fall shows included a booth or room for like data collection in partnership with this company? And we had a poll, like a bunch of polls in that room that were specifically around, because remember how we talked to Spotco about how expensive surveying it. They have a huge surveying part of their business and it's really expensive or high touch. I forget exactly how they were talking about it. And we were talking about like how many people we can reach in our venue with these really low touch polls. Like what if we did something like that?
Interesting. And wait, so just so I understand, like we are probably going to over-index for the type of person who will have been to a Broadway show. So it's valuable to ask these people.
Right.
But then separately, we are partnering with some organization that does the like, hi, this is a legitimate survey collected in a methodologically sound way.
Oh, so maybe it's a tri partnership, because in my brain, what we need to do something like that effectively, but I am super obsessed, I cannot now stop thinking about this, is you need the like Spotco of the world that you just described that knows how to survey correct and not have everything thrown out.
Methodically. No, methodological is its own word this space.
Okay.
I feel like there is a way to structure that sentence around the word methodical. I don't know. I give up.
So that partner, but then the like counting together or I don't know, one of the orgs, it's like helping us with the questions we need to ask. Mm. And then us, who are the distribution of that, basically with our venue. Yeah. And we incentivize by like the label on the room and the photo, right? Like come in here if you care about, and we're just like basically backdooring those motherfuckers.
Yeah. Oh, I mentioned it. I wonder if it somehow biases the sample for people self-select in, but who cares? Let's Paco tell us that. This makes me think of, so Crooked Media, the entity and organization started by former Obama bros, does this exactly. Like they're the media arm that is helping to craft questions for and then raise the stories of their partner who Change Research, I think that they're called. Mm. And they just do polling around the country. And like the partnership is really cool because Change Research, maybe have that name right, maybe don't, apologies, are the ones providing like the methodologically sound underpinning. And then Crooked Media is helping to raise up the learnings, raise up the stories that can be told from that research. And so that could be us.
What if our podcast was live in our venue once a month where we did exactly that with all of the stuff and had guests on to talk just like Clubhouse
Sounds
to talk
fun.
About all of the findings for that month.
Wait, One quick question. What kind of questions are we asking of these people who come into our virtual venues? Is it like, have you been to a Broadway show recently? Like what is the...
That feels like the qualifying question. Like, I think if we're going to track the conversation we've had today across Clubhouse and now, I think my brain says we have all of these organizations putting in a lot of time to collect data to give visibility that hopefully inspires change or action to, you know, in terms of like diversity, inclusion, equity in our theater community, right? But the question or the thing that has come up across all these conversations is that at the end of the day, each of these interested parties can go do some research about it, but there's no incentivization or collection of data at the highest level for commercial. This is a commercial theater problem, right? And unusually, like no other theater, I don't believe, structure has the same problem where they just lock up all their data. And so if we go to that, if we follow this trail to that, right, which is the pessimist view, is we can never drive meaningful change in this area in commercial theater because there is no data to parse through, therefore no path to incentivization for producers to like learn and feel that there is value, right, in diversity, inclusion, and equity, all that stuff.
Got it. So this is like more of that bottom up that I was talking about earlier in my like framing in my brain, where it's like, oh, if all of these people who are self-described theater goers and theater fans and theater patrons are answering questions to the effect of like Broadway so white or whatever the story is that comes out of it, it becomes that story and that hopeful forcing mechanism on the gatekeepers to say like, oh, there is a profit incentive here because all of these people who are theater goers are actually saying like they want different.
Right. I think that's it, right? Like being able to amplify in at scale the value basically like means they can't, at some point, if we do it right, they can't ignore it. You know what I mean? And they certainly, you can't ignore there's a problem if there is data and metrics around the other side of things, you know, like, I don't know. I'm like, I think it's pretty interesting.
I agree.
I also just had a realization that I'm taking a very tough stance in this podcast against the families. And I have met some Nederlanders. I liked them very much. I think
great name.
Like the Rots are pretty cool, but like, so sorry, but it's a podcast and I'm supposed to be divisive. So I'm going to continue to maintain my mantle of like railing against the business of Broadway and the five families that control it.
Oh, cool. Wait, should I take the other stance and we should we fight about it? Like, no, I love them. I really like, what's his name? Jordan Roth's style and sort of presence in the world. How dare you?
Well, I think all day, if this, I like, this is a good place to get to, because I feel like we've had ideas around the way that we could help with, you know, collecting information and data. And, you know, this thing that I said today in Clubhouse holds true, which is I feel like there's an unfair burden on the disproportionately affected population to then do their own fucking research to show everybody how disproportionately affected they are, which is horse shit. So like if we can do something simply and easily with what we're already doing that helps with that, like I think that's pretty badass.
Yeah. No, it's a very cool idea. Should we cut it from the podcast so no one steals it? Just kidding.
No one's doing digital venues with thousands of people, right? I think we're okay for now. Can't stop us from putting polls in our venues.
Truth. Yeah. Oof. Well,
I
have a fun note. I want to come back to this one.
Love. Yes, I agree. And also, I love watching you try to segue. It's so fun. Better in person, in case you were wondering.
I was actually just thinking, like, how far over are we? Do we need to segue into the closing? What I want to know from everyone who's listening is, if we gave you $1,000, what would you do with it? Would you spend it on the theater? Ooh. Would you buy podcasting equipment to challenge this podcast? Would you? I don't know. I got no better ideas.
Give a playwright, a budding brilliant playwright, 1 week of a month to not work another job.
Oh, that's really sad. Whatever it is, let us know. Hit us up, because we want to keep these conversations going around and around and around and around. And that only happens if you keep the chain going. So hit us up on Twitter at BWI Unlocked. Use that hashtag TechTheaterCH. Share your thoughts. Tell us what you would spend with $1,000.
And if you enjoy Joe's descent into sadness as much as I do, you should probably come join our next conversation Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern on Clubhouse. In fact, I mean, we really have today even at Clubhouse. We sure did bring it down at the end. It was real good. So we're super, super good at the womp womp ending. And if you want to see it for yourself, you can join us on Clubhouse. Raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
And if that wasn't enticing enough, and you want to like go even deeper with us and even like join this Broadway Unlocked family, you can actually host a show with us. You could be like us. You could share your depression on mic. and to do that, you just all you have to do is just mosey on over to broadwayunlocked.com/ch and talk to the nice robo Jess about getting on the show.
Oh, Lord have mercy, y'all. Every single topic we've talked about on Clubhouse and on this podcast is inspired by the articles we read each week in our Slack channel with all the folks that work with us and by the people on our stage. So join the club. Please tweet us at TechTheaterCH, slide into our DMs, and join in the conversation. Until then, we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.